Hello and welcome back to Advanced Studio Classroom. My name is Brandon and I have Ellen and Linda here on day three of our society article. Welcome, panelists.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Great to have you back here today. And we want to recap just a bit. So panelists, tell us something that we learned over the past 2 days. I'll start with you, Linda.
We came across the phrase consent fatigue, and that is when we get tired of giving our smartphone or our smart device consent or permission to do something.
Yes, you try to, for example, today on your smartphone, download an app and it asks you for permission, right? And you may get tired of giving your devices permission. Okay, Ellen, something else we've learned over the past 2 days?
Well, we've talked about this idea of loss of creativity due to a smart society or smart gadget society. And I think this is very true, right? Especially if you look at little kids who have grown up in this day and age of just iPads and just, you know, tablets. Some of them don't know how to play outside or even what to do outside. So
yeah, they walk outside and they just look around. What should I do?
And then they go, can I go back and play with my iPad now?
Mm-hmm.
So loss of creativity, and how will that shape our society when these kids grow up?
Okay. And we also learned how this is all affecting us, and we learned about different devices. For example, we have the Smart Hub. This is part of the Iris Smart Home System. It's there on page 38. We discussed that on day one, and this allows you to control your thermostat, for example, remotely. So you're away from home, and maybe you use your smartphone to turn the temperature up or down. And they also have something called a smart plug, and that allows for remote on and off control and measures energy consumption of a device that's plugged in. And so it is really interesting, all of the data that's being collected by these devices with the hopes of helping us improve our lives and maybe save energy, for example, or even save money. And then on day two, we even learned about smart furniture, Linda, and it actually nags people, doesn't it?
Right. It reminds you or nags you to sit properly if you're not in a correct posture.
Okay, and that could also be helpful. But the big question here is, well, really what's there at the top of page 38? Will our smart gadgets become trusted or oppressive companions? And so that's the question that we may have to wait to answer as we go further into this smart society. And today we are on page 40, and we're going to talk about privacy. But before we actually get into that, I want to take a look at the top of 39, page 39, where it says prediction from chip maker Intel. And I would like to ask Ellen to read that for us.
Sure. It says, your bed knows when you wake up. It tells the radio to switch on so you can listen to the traffic and weather report or music it knows you enjoy. It tells the coffee maker to make a fresh pot. When you prepare for the day, your toothbrush notifies you that it's time to see the dentist, and it schedules an appointment based on your availability. Your shower adjusts its temperature based on your preference, and when you go to the bathroom mirror, it reminds you to take your vitamins.
Okay, thank you, Ellen. The only sentence I really heard you say was, it tells the coffee machine to make a fresh pot. That stuck out to me, and I'm excited about that. And anything here that you particularly like, Linda?
Well, I think these are all good reminders, but do we really want this, like, our daily life to be like this, for something to be telling us what to do all the time or to do all these things for us? I think, I don't know.
I would like to try it, see what it's like. But yes, we may, you know, grow tired of that, and
or it might feel like the article said that we're losing control or feel less in control of our lives.
That's right. Ellen, is there something here that you think would be great to have in your life? One of these conveniences.
Well, I think the traffic and weather report are great when, you know, your alarm goes off. I think that's helpful. The other stuff, you know, kind of like Linda said, I'm not sure whether or not I would want to entrust those types of things to a machine. I think for smart society, it's a very short-term idea right now. We don't know the long-term effects of what all these smart gadgets will have. Something like, you know, making an appointment is something in the past we've all kind of had to kind of do on our own. And, you know, we've seen in other articles in advance that, you know, there's an increase in Alzheimer's. Does some of this contribute to that?
Well, that's what I'm thinking of as well with the whole idea of reminders. It says here that your bathroom mirror can remind you to take your vitamins. You can't even go to your bathroom and brush your teeth without having something, you know, flashing up on the mirror. And that would get kind of maybe annoying in a way. Or you can't have any, you know, alone time. You just, where you sit and you're quiet, which is very important. And also, like you said, if we're always having these devices remind us, we are not thinking of it ourselves, which could affect us in a negative way, maybe. It may contribute to something like Alzheimer's.
All right. And if we don't have that mirror to remind us to take our vitamins, will we remember to take our vitamins? Are we so dependent on that to be able to get these little things done?
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, the thing about gadgets is they always need power or they always need batteries. Mm-hmm. So when those things go, what happens?
That's right. Well, we are on our third and last day of this article, and today we are primarily going to talk about privacy, which is a huge issue when it comes to technology and the internet and so forth. So let's get into that. We are on page 40, and we will have our first reading for today.
Aside from worrying about who will see the personal information these gadgets gather on their users and spew across the internet, privacy advocates fear the technology might turn everyone into timid sheep. Because the data smart devices gather will likely result in the government and others creating profiles on everyone, behaving normal will eventually become the ultimate practice in the Internet of Things, warns Paul DeHert, a criminal law expert at the Institute for European Studies in Brussels.
Well, we don't want to be timid sheep. That's for sure, right? Of course, the word timid here, of course, means very shy, right? Or maybe even kind of afraid.
Right, meaning easily scared.
Okay. So we start off here, actually, it says, aside from worrying. And that's, you know, we've been worrying about a lot of things. So aside from worrying about who will see the personal information these gadgets gather on their users and spew across the internet, privacy advocates, you know, fear the technology might turn everyone into these timid sheep. And so we have, you know, people are worried about what they're going to do with the information that's being collected, whether that be from governments or corporations or whatever. And then it might turn people into these kind of timid sheep. They're afraid of maybe if they do something, it will be reported somewhere, right? There's always someone watching you. There are surveillance cameras. And then that could bring a lot of fear, and that's not good because people are already afraid as it is, right?
Right, absolutely. You know, we've talked a lot about big data in advanced, and it's this idea that, you know, these little gadgets, these little devices, your phones, because they're so personalized, they're collecting so much data on you. And many people, I won't say everybody, but many people, you know, some of that data might be too sensitive for kind of everybody to know.
All right, and people are afraid that governments, for example, will collect data and create profiles about them. And in the end, everyone may just kind of behave in the same manner, which is not fun, is it, Linda?
Right, and this goes back to a term that we saw on the first day, being a conformist society. Everybody acting the same or conforming to a certain behavior.
Okay, so behaving normal will eventually become the ultimate practice in the Internet of Things, right? And you kind of hear some dramatic music in the background there almost. And this is according to Paul DeHert, and he is a criminal law expert at the Institute for European Studies in Brussels. What do you think about all of this, Helen?
Well, I mean, I think it's very scary for myself. I like to use smart devices, but they scare me quite a bit, too.
Okay. All right. And Linda, any other thoughts?
Yeah, this is a really sensitive and hot topic, just about privacy or an invasion of privacy. And you probably have heard of Edward Snowden. He was a former national security agent for the U.S. government, and he is now a fugitive because he revealed information about the government surveillance, how much they know about us through our communications, through our phones, through our computers. Yeah, so it's a very sensitive topic.
It is, and of course, a lot of people don't want governments collecting all that data, and so it is uncomfortable for a lot of people. Well, what about this intrusion of privacy? Let's hear more about that in today's second reading.
An intrusion of privacy? Government officials in the U.S., Europe, and elsewhere are studying the use of smart video surveillance systems to spot abnormal behavior. One example is BRS Labs' behavior recognition system that Amtrak has deployed in some of its San Francisco Bay Area train stations and that San Francisco's Municipal Transportation Agency plans to use. After several weeks of videotaping a location, BRS Labs technology learns to recognize usual patterns of activity and alerts its human operators if it spots anything out of the ordinary, said the company's chief scientist, Wesley Cobb.
All right, so we asked the question, an intrusion of privacy. Well, intrusion means someone's going into a place where they're not welcomed, and many people do not welcome some of this technology, or at least the data that's being collected by the technology, especially when we're talking about various governments. So we see here the U.S. government and Europe and elsewhere. They are studying the use of smart video surveillance systems. And what are they trying to do, Ellen?
Well, they're trying to spot abnormal behavior. So behavior that doesn't kind of conform to what they expect.
To what's considered to be normal, right?
Right.
They're trying to spot that, trying to find that. And we have an example here from BRS Labs, and they have a behavior recognition system. So they're monitoring an area and they're looking at different behaviors, and if basically their devices detect something that seems abnormal, they will alert someone, or they will alert the authorities or the government, or the in this case maybe someone there at the BRS Labs. And so a lot of people, they look at that and they think there could be some problems involved. But why are they really wanting to do this? Why would they want to study an area and look at the different behaviors?
Well, for national security reasons, or security reasons in general, especially with the terrorist attacks that we've experienced, that puts governments on high alert.
Mm-hmm.
So they want to be able to detect behavior that might lead to or might prevent a terrorist attack.
Okay. Why would some people have a problem with this? In one sense, it sounds like a good idea, Ellen.
Well, I think people just like privacy. They like the idea that there isn't a big brother kind of tracking their every move. And when I say big brother, it's just it's a phrase that we often use to call, just refer to when somebody or a society is being monitored to kind of too close a degree.
Okay. And we see here that they're trying to spot abnormal behavior. And here in the text, we see that that is in quotation marks. And that is because what I consider abnormal behavior may be different from what you consider. And in this case, they may pick up something that they think is abnormal, but it may not be abnormal.
Right. Defining what's normal or what's abnormal, that's subjective, right? Everybody has their opinion of what normal might be.
Yes, and we see that in daily, you know, situations. What I consider to be normal, someone else might think it's abnormal. You know, we think about ourselves. We think, I'm normal, but what does that really mean? You know?
Right, and I mean, normality is something that's not transferable when we talk about cultures.
Mm.
So, you know, what's okay to do in Taipei might not be okay to do in Tennessee.
That's
or
right.
in Miami or elsewhere in the world. How are they defining normal or abnormal? I would be interested to find out.
So again, we're talking about privacy, and as Linda mentioned, I believe earlier, a lot of people, they don't like you invading their privacy, and they don't want you to collect information about them. Okay, and so a lot of people would have problems with this kind of technology, but on the other hand, if it is able to prevent some act of terror, well, then a lot of people might say it's okay. So some people have problems with governments collecting information. Others say, I don't have anything to hide, and if it helps protect our country, then go for it. And so there are differing opinions, and I think the big issue is if they start using the technology in a way that really intrudes people's lives. They have the information, but they're using it in a very poor way. I think that would cause an uproar with a lot of people. And so there are two different sides, and you can, of course, think about it and see which side you're on, and even write into us and let us know at studioclassroom.com about your thoughts considering this privacy issue. Well, we do have more to learn concerning this, and so we want to have our last reading for our society article.
Two European Internet of Things technologists have even proposed sending people warnings through their smart devices if the gadgets detect behavior violating regulations of a society. Moreover, to prevent antisocial behavior from reoccurring, they suggest automatic publication of such incidents on the web, a strategy they term name and shame. Many experts believe the benefits of the Internet of Things will far outweigh any problems it causes. Besides, Elizabeth Charnock, CEO of Half Moon Bay software company Chenope, said it's common for new innovations to trigger temporary hand-wringing. People start off screaming about privacy, she said, and then people just stop thinking about it. But scientists at the United Kingdom's University of Nottingham concluded in a study that human interactions with the Internet of Things remains largely unexplored, and they cautioned that the potential consequences to individuals, families, and societies could be enormous.
Okay, so now we have, I think, some very interesting examples, and we start off with these European technologists, and of course a technologist is an expert in modern technology. So they know a lot about technology, and these two in particular, they've proposed sending people warnings through their smart devices. Okay, if they violate some regulation, alright, and so what are they talking about exactly here, Linda?
Well, they want to prevent antisocial behavior. And antisocial here just means behavior that goes against the norm or is something that's looked down upon. But this whole idea of detecting this behavior, I'm a little skeptical about.
Mm-hmm.
Or I feel that there's a lot of issues with it. Because how do you really determine, like, what's, again, before, as we said, what's normal, what's abnormal?
Yes.
Here, what's antisocial behavior?
Okay, well, maybe, for example, you're not supposed to chew gum in a certain area, for example, and you are chewing gum, and they catch that, and then they say, well, that's against the rules, right? And so they alert you or some official of that, and that could maybe stop you from doing that, I guess. But it could go into all sorts of areas that get really iffy and maybe into some gray areas, right? Because some of this could be subjective, right? As
mm-hmm.
you mentioned earlier, Linda. And they are trying to prevent antisocial behavior from reoccurring. And then they talk about this automatic publication of incidents on the web. Could you imagine, Ellen, that you are walking around somewhere and then you find your picture online somewhere saying that you did something wrong and you had no idea? It just, published it on the web. How would you feel about that?
I think that's very dangerous. And, with the creation of Facebook, you can create, different groups on Facebook. There's this one group on Facebook that I know of, and I have actually scrolled through, which is, the MRT Hall of Shame of something, sort, where it's basically people secretly taking pictures of other people on the MRT
on the
who
metro,
are
right, yeah.
kind of not conforming to what is acceptable or something. And I think, scrolling through it, you maybe chuckle or kind of agree with certain things, but I think it could be very dangerous too.
Okay, and they even call this name and shame, okay? They're trying basically to get people to abide by the rules in society. So in one sense, you think, well, that could be a good thing, but it really depends on how far they take it. And maybe you think it's just a bad thing altogether because, hey, they're invading your privacy.
Right. Right. And also think about the margin of error. There might be an explanation to that behavior that's seen in the photo that was posted. So you really don't know. And if someone is made to feel shame, I don't think that's a good way to make them prevent or stop doing that behavior. It just creates another problem in society.
Yeah, for some people, it could encourage them to act out more or to do that again, right?
Right.
And so in the end, the situation may grow even worse than it was.
Exactly.
Right? Okay, well, many experts believe the benefits of the Internet of Things will far outweigh any problems it causes. And so we have an example here. We have Elizabeth Charnock. She is the CEO of Half Moon Bay Software Company. And Half Moon Bay Software Company, Shinope, okay, and said it's common for new innovations to trigger temporary hand-wringing. And so you think of someone very worried when you see that word hand-wringing. They're worried about something, Ellen. And we see that sometimes when people learn about something new, in this case we're talking about technology, they may look at the downside of things instead of looking at the good things about it.
Right. So we, in English, there's a phrase we say, the benefits outweigh, the costs. And this is kind of the notion that Ms. Charnock is referring to, this idea that the Internet of Things will actually provide a lot more positives than it will negatives. And it's kind of worth the worry that we will have.
And it's new, and so people think, wait a minute, I don't want people to invade my privacy and so forth, but then they get used to it, and they stop thinking about it. And that's basically what she says next. People start off screaming about privacy, and then they get used to it, they stop thinking about it, and it's done, it's over, it's okay. And that could potentially or possibly be true. We'll have to wait and see. I guess it depends on how much governments or other organizations invade people's privacy.
Well, although people may stop thinking about it, it doesn't mean that, it's something that they shouldn't be concerned about.
Mm-hmm. Very good point. Okay, and we end here by taking a look at a study that was done in the United Kingdom. And what do we find out there, Ellen?
Well, it's a study that concluded that human interactions with the Internet of Things remains largely unexplored. So they think, for the most part, even though we are learning more and more about this Internet of Things, what the impact to human society will actually be is still not really that known.
Right, we don't know, and technology is changing all the time and at a very, at a very fast pace. So we see here that these authors, these scientists, they continued and said that the potential consequences to individuals, families, and societies could be what? Enormous. Right? So there could be a lot involved here that we don't know about. There could be some consequences to all of this. And when you see that word enormous, that means there could be very huge consequences, right?
Right, exactly. You know, how it will ultimately shape society is not known.
Okay, so here at the end, we kind of have a more balanced view. We see one person saying that, oh, people get upset, but in the end, they get used to it, and they won't worry about it anymore. And then we have the scientist saying, wait a minute, we have a lot more to explore. And Linda, that seems like a good way to end for you, because I know you like to keep things,
balanced
approach, right?
Right. So we still think need to proceed with caution, right? Don't just toss everything to the wind and just go full steam ahead, but... yeah, to have balance, especially when it comes to privacy, right? We want to be secure. We want our nation to be secure, but we also want to maintain a certain level of privacy.
Okay. Well, listeners, we want to know what you think. Write into us. Go into our website, studioclassroom.com, and let us know your comments about this article in particular, Living in a Smart Society. We thank you for joining us once again, and we hope you will join us again here on Advanced Studio Classroom next time. Until then, this is Brandon.
This is Ellen.
This is Linda.
Saying goodbye.
Bye. Goodbye.